Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551, as always, Geraldine Kane is in Wicklow. Geraldine, you're listening to the stories, and there's more to come about the way people with different abilities, labelled disabled, are treated in Emerald Park. But you say this is not just peculiar to one location. People with disabilities are mistreated in other ways in other places. Geraldine.
Yes, that's quite correct.
Tell us how.
Do you want me to talk?
Yeah, please,
now?
Geraldine. Yeah, great.
Okay. I have a muscle wasting condition since I was a small child, progressive. And I found when I was, I'm from Wicklow Town, but when I was walking in Dublin especially, if I was meeting somebody after work or whatever, and I went to the taxi rank to get a taxi, even though it was plain to the taxi driver, if it was I who was getting the taxi, not the other person with me, I would turn to the other person and say, where is she going? And my friend wouldn't answer them, but I'd kill them if they did.
Well done.
And I'd say, she is going to such a place, wherever. Certainly a miracle would occur in the taxi. When I would arrive at my destination, I would certainly know how to sort out my money to pay the fare.
Of course.
But a short time before that, I was going to waste the taxi driver's time and my money driving somewhere I didn't know where I wanted to drive.
So you became invisible.
Yes, I became invisible until there was money to be paid.
Exactly.
When I was in a restaurant, I would go into a shop to buy. Suppose I said the shop to sell such a kind of perfume, to sell a bag of fig rolls, say two very different items. The person would answer the person beside me. And I would say, why are you answering that man, that woman?
Yeah.
How do they know? Or I would often say to the person with me, will you go to the other end of the shop or wait outside the shop for me? Then the person serving me would either have to talk to themselves or talk to me, one or the other.
So
if there's someone with me, I'm invisible. Can't decide myself what I want or go into a fast food place, you know. And the person beside me is often asked, what do I want? I find, generally speaking, not always, it's older people of my own age or younger than me that are guilty of that. I found younger people are generally more upfront about directly asking me. Not always, but since I have a degenerative condition, so since I became a wheelchair user, which I wasn't always, I'm really treated like an idiot. And treated even more invisibly than previously.
Treated like an idiot. Terrible. Terrible, Geraldine.
Yeah.
And Geraldine, when you check people and say, I am here, by the way. I am here. I'm not invisible. How do they react?
Sometimes they get a bit flustered. Sometimes they will answer directly then.
Okay.
And sometimes we'll continue to engage with the other person.
so sometimes they continue to ignore you.
Yes.
Continue. Okay, stay with us, Geraldine. Joe at rt.ie, 0818 715 815. Mary Goucher has contacted us again. Emerald Park, this magnificent roller coaster and various other things.
Absolutely, it is, yeah.
So what happened at the what happened at the weekend?
When we saw the documentary, like my husband was saying, oh, I need to try that roller coaster. So myself and my son, Ross, now we wouldn't be the bravest of people. So he rallied the family members. So we all like got booking together.
Okay.
And my sister rang to say that there's a special needs discount.
Okay.
Because my son is 34 and he has an intellectual disability.
Right.
So to be honest with you, like, I probably wouldn't have really done it before. Like when Ross goes out with the day service, like they do, say, the cinema or the zoo, and they're kind of always doing that in a group. So I said, I was sure, feck it, we'll have a look and see.
Okay.
Ross was delighted with that. So we went on to book on Wednesday or Thursday, and we went into the special needs thing. And we booked it through that, and then it's the email said that you need documentation to prove, like, or say from your day service or whatever, just to say. So on the Friday then, I rang Ross's day service, I rang the manager, and Janine wasn't actually there at that time to be able to do anything about it. They didn't have any letterhead or whatever for St. John of God's. So she said, and his key worker, both, and the three of us said together, look, it's not going to be an issue. He has his public service cards. Now, Ross, thank God we're blessed, he's physically perfect. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So they said the public service card will be enough because he obviously has his bus pass and that plus companion. You know, so it's obvious that he would need a companion. Now, he is travel trained to go from Clane to his day service, but say if it was another other situations, then he obviously would have to have me or my sister, whatever.
Yeah, we understand.
So we said, fine. So we went in, obviously Megan impressed me right in the car park, everything is looking fab, and we went in and there was no queue. This is the thing, like when you were saying yesterday about, like, is it a thing that people do try to fraud this situation with special needs? There was nobody on the queue for special needs. The other lines were packed to the brim. And so we went in, and the young guy, my husband gave the phone, and he said, no, I need documentation or whatever, identification. So Ross took out his card, and I took out my public service card. And as soon as Ross put it on the counter, he said, no, we don't accept that. That's not going to be any good. That's no use.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I don't actually have anything else. And I said, like, I did ring his day service and they assured me, and even I agreed that that would be enough because it's a card, it's a bus pass, like, it has a photograph on it. You know, like, he's 34, like, you know, he has an intellectual disability. He's in the services, like, since he was a kid. So poor Ross was standing there. And I said, well, you know, what can we do? And he said, well, you're not going in with that. That's not going to work. It's like, so I said, okay. So I said to my husband, like, just pay. And Derek said, no, like, that's crazy. You know, it actually isn't about the money. It's like the principle of the thing. Poor Ross is standing there. And then people could hear the conversation then, and people were beginning to look. And it was like, I don't know, it's like as if you're trying to do this, like, you know, sneak your way into there. And I wouldn't mind because, as I said, we would never have been going on anything, just my husband would. So myself and Ross was going to be the bag minders and the videoers and the photographers, you know. And the rest of my family was gone through. Like, there were six other members of the family gone through. So it wasn't an option to leave. So Derek said, can we speak to a manager? And he said, okay. He went into the office, and when a girl came out, and as soon as she saw, she said, like, what's the problem? And I said, well, we haven't got the right documentation. We thought the public service card would have been okay. I was trying to keep it, you know. And then we don't accept that. Did you not get the email? It says on the email. So, like, Ross obviously wasn't saying anything. He's just standing there. He, like, as I said, you know, and we definitely didn't look like people who were going to be going in and going on 20 roller coaster, you know, or like, so I said to the girl, well, look, and I turned to the side a little bit and lowered my voice and said, listen, he attends St. John of God's Day services. He's 34 years old. He has an intellectual disability, you know. And she said, no, that's not going to work. He can't. So I just said, look, I just said, Derek, just pay. It's fine. And she just said, now, there you go. Now, that's great. And thanks, Emil. And she walked off. But when we went in then, it was actually, I wasn't even angry. It's just so upsetting. it's like, you know, and Ross did not know, like, what to make of that. Like, he knows he has special needs. If the girl had took the time to talk to him, it would have been more obvious, if you know what I mean. And so basically, like, the family were upset by that as well, because, you know, it just wasn't a nice situation to happen. And when we said, right, let's get on with the day, we've all been looking forward to it. So I rang Emerald Park yesterday and I spoke to a lovely girl on the phone, and she agreed that, like, that was absolutely unacceptable, that, like, you know, that policy is too rigid. It's very black and white. And, you know, and she said as well to send an email to the customer experience people and let them know. And then I heard then the person from Emerald Park, like, yesterday, talking about Emerald Park, sorry, on Liveline yesterday. So I said, well, like, I'm going to ring and say my experience. And like that, you know, Ross, although he has an intellectual disability, like, if Ross goes into a shop, like, he's very capable of speaking for himself. And saying, you know, listen, I can't read. Can you help me out with this, or how much is something? Because Ross wouldn't know €5 from €50.
Yeah, okay.
So it isn't about the money or anything. But like that, Ross was disappointed by the whole thing. Like, you know, he knows the value of his card. He knows he has special needs, you know, and all his friends have special needs. And I think that's why it's just a shock that it happened, because the majority of people are amazing. And I don't believe that the Coyle family actually even know the rigidness of this situation. I don't think, you know what I'm saying? I feel like that. It was just unbelievable that two young people, like the girl, the fella and the girl, yes, on Saturday, that, like, they literally were not open to three grown-ups standing there and trying to have, like, it was so embarrassing. It was humiliating. Like, I haven't actually experienced it like that before. It was awful.
Well, the starting point, as I said yesterday, and I said a few months ago as well, the starting point in Emerald Park seems to be, if you say and produce any form of documentation to say you have a disability, they would say, prove it.
Yeah.
Prove it. We had that bizarre scene yesterday where our caller was, when he told him he had a prosthesis leg, they reached over and they wanted to see the prosthesis.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. It's shameful. Like, and it's hard to believe in this day and age that such a big attraction, such an amazing place as that, are so backward in it. It is unbelievable. I'm just shocked by it. That's the truth. And I have to say that the girl I spoke to yesterday on the phone, she was in complete agreement with me. She said the staff are too young, they're not being trained properly, and, like, send in the email because things need to change. So she didn't deny at all what I was saying. She said that it was awful that it happened the way it happened, you know. So I don't know, but I know one thing. I actually rang the manager in Ross's Day Service yesterday, Janine, and I said we need to have something on paper going forward for Ross now, because I feel like he was so vulnerable the other day. And if he's in another situation where, I don't know, like, if he wasn't with staff or he wasn't with me, how does he prove he has an intellectual disability? It's literally just turned everything upside down, even though, as I say, the majority of people are amazing. Literally just threw me. Now, it was awful.
Stay with us, Mary. Geraldine, did you want to come in there, Geraldine?
Yes, thanks. I cannot believe the story I've just heard. And the story yesterday, it's disgraceful and humiliating.
And it's more. Yeah,
it's disgraceful. I just can't believe it.
Okay, let me go to... Stay with us, Nora Lynch. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text. Go ahead, Nora.
Yeah, Joe, I totally can attest to what those callers have said, because while my sojourn in a wheelchair recently was only temporary because of a broken ankle, I found that the people who I still went out and about, and they addressed my husband, who was pushing the wheelchair with me, and not me. And as a situation researcher, I'm not that old, and I certainly didn't look gaga. So I made sure to answer them so that probably to kind of press a point that they that I was there, you know. But I really thought that society had accepted people in wheelchairs or disabled people as being, you know, members of society and that they should be treated as such. But over 25 years ago, I did have my father was in a wheelchair on occasion. And I do know that members of the medical profession who should have known better mm-hmm. often would address myself or my sister who was with him and as if he was deaf and didn't speak, so, which he did.
Okay, so Nora, you're able to say, has much changed? God, we hope it has. Has much changed?
I was shocked to realise that it wasn't changed. I really, really was. And I was both shocked and disappointed because my son actually works with special needs, and to my shame, I probably ignored when he said on occasion that when he's been worked with these people and he's taken them out, and that they wouldn't address him, they wouldn't address the person in the wheelchair, they'd only address him, and he'd have to attend to their shopping needs and that. But it's wrong. It's totally wrong. Yeah.
Well, let's hope Geraldine's testimony and Mary and indeed your own will help persuade people and as a society, us, and I mean us, I include Ross, I include everyone in that. We are us. Okay, Nora, yeah. Good to meet you, Magnus. Nora Lynch, Mary Goucher, okay. And Geraldine Kane. Thank you all. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Our concerts are in the air, as you know, and I just want to tell a few friends of mine. I was due to meet them at the weekend. I've been rostered by RTE to go door to door to sell Oasis tickets, such as our campaign, to sell them out for them, just in case they're not sold out with all our efforts. Keith Power. I'm only joking. Keith Power. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Where was the concert? What happened? And why? And Keith, why are you surprised? Why are people surprised that the price of hotels in Dublin are going to go up for this concert next year? Why are people surprised? What I want to hear if anyone had booked a hotel in Dublin next August and was bumped to make way for whatever they're called. It escapes me at the moment. Was anyone bumped out of our hotel room? I'd love to hear that, and I want to hear the name of the hotel as well. But anyway, Keith, name the place, name the band, name the problem.
Okay, I was at the Dede concert in Commons Barracks there a couple of days ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And now this seems to be a new kind of phenomenon at concerts. It's something that's new to me, but apparently it's creeping in. And that's the charging of a deposit for a plastic cup.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a hard plastic beaker kind of cup for your beer.
Okay.
So at this concert, they were charging €3 per drink. So you bought a round of, say, four drinks, and so that'd be €12, which is then it is refunded to you when you go back to the bar and queue up again.
No, okay.
Get your money back.
They take the €3 initially for per beaker.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had four beakers, that was four plastic cups, that was €12, on top of the price of the beer, obviously.
On top of the price. Okay. So it works out at €7.50 for beer plus three, €10.50 per drink, and you get back 12 when you bring your.
So what's the problem? What's the problem, Guido? What's the problem,
well,
Keith?
The problem is, I was there with a pal of mine, and he bought the drinks.
Okay.
It was up to two of us, and when I went back to the bar, he just bought one beer and a water for himself, which coincidentally was in a tin, which there was no deposit on.
Yeah.
But the beaker, so I when I finished, I nipped out of the toilet and went up to the bar to try and get the refund, but they would only refund onto his card.
Ah.
So this awkward situation where I was left holding this drink, and at the end of the night, asked him, did he, you know, want to get the refund? And he's like, whatever, you know, don't bother. And then I noticed there was hundreds of cups around the place, all probably from people who just thought it was just too much hassle to queue up again to get the refund back. So, you know, I'm not sure where this unclaimed money goes to, if it goes into the promoter's pocket or if it goes to some sort of green initiative fund or whatever. But it just seems, you know, I'm all in favour of green initiatives, but this is just seems like a step too far, you know, that you're left holding.
Just, well, we're all, and there's other schemes in operation where people have to pay deposits and they're not getting their money back, or not able to get their money back. But anyway, are you saying, okay, you paid the €3 per cup, per beaker.
Yeah.
If I go back up immediately, having walloped my pint of Heineken or whatever, if I go back up immediately, can I get my €3 back there and then?
If you paid for the drink with your card, yes.
Okay. But you're saying
if somebody else paid for the drink, he has to go back up to the bar himself. And he's already got your drink.
Okay. And obviously people will go to get their €3 back, or their €12 if it's four cups, back at the end of the gig. Is there an easy queue? Is there an easy system to get your money back at the end?
Well, there's actually an incentive to be difficult and to work slowly, you know, so because people will just like look at the queue and go, oh, no, not, you know, the longer the queue, the less likely people are to claim the money back. So that's an issue too. But I'm not sure how easy this will get. I think somebody said they queued for half an hour once, you know, to get their deposit back. So, you know, I'm not really sure as to how long it takes, but I'd imagine it's more than 2 minutes, you know.
And
everybody's going at the same time.
Okay, Keith, what I'm after, and we still can't get the answer from Return, the new Quango that's doing all these machines for the extra 25 cent on every bottle and 15 cent on the cans. We still can't, they still won't tell us how many deposits they keep. No, they get all those deposits. The Return get all those deposits. They get that money up front.
Mm.
They get it up front because they charge the supplier. But they still won't. I know they're spending it now on Tenio, the biggest PR company in the world. That's now their PR company, Los Angeles, Washington, New York, Berlin, Paris, London, Dublin.
Right.
They're now spending it on advertising campaigns to tell us how brilliant they are. But he won't tell us how much money is not being claimed back, because it can be. I went the other day, an Aldi, and there it was, machine out of order, awaiting technician. We got on to, they're called Follow Fox events. Okay. And I think the sting in any of these questions is the money. How much money is unclaimed? Okay.
Exactly.
Now, as you were looking around, how many cups were on the ground? Or whatever they do be?
I would say hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yeah. I mean, they were in the bins and they were stacked in, you know, they stacked into each other and they were there, there's little piles of, you know, half a dozen here and there. But there was hundreds of cups not claimed. But the thing is, like, this, it's kind of strange things that the event is, they're guaranteed to get all the cups back, regardless of whether there's a deposit or not.
Okay. In other words, there's no, did you see, now Keith, please speak truthfully and honestly, did you see anyone leaving the venue secreting some of those cups on their person?
No, but I imagine people might sneak in their own cups next time. That might be an option.
Yeah, but they probably won't fill them. They probably, you go with your own cup, you won't
nobody sneak, because they're not branded. It's not an event mug. It's not
so
like,
they
I
are,
mean, there are
cases
of people in Oktoberfest will steal the big glass and you have to pay a deposit on that. But people nick it because, you know, it's a
souvenir.
It's just a plastic beaker.
Good point.
Plain
plastic beaker, okay. They say, and they've given us a statement, oh, the signs everywhere, they said. Read the signs. For the avoidance of doubt, but these are PR people writing this, and in fairness, they've been told what to write by their client. But anyway, the Echo Cup initiative is a substantial cost to the promoter, but they are reusable. Isn't that the key? That's the sting. The money, and they are reusable. It's not a revenue source, and any outstanding deposits, of which there are very, very few. Are offset against the significant cost of implementing this initiative.
I don't know about that. It looks like free money to me. I mean, the cost is probably a cost, because the duplication of work. The barman has to serve you the drink, and then he has to do double the effort to give you your refund as well. So yeah, that's, you know, they need more staff. But I think it's a pointless exercise, because all they have to do is.
But you see, all you have to say these days is that it's eco-friendly, and if you try and protest that, you'll be shouted down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as I say, I'm in favour of this, but this is
we all are.
Like it's gone a bit too. It's pointless to the extent that nobody keeps the cups. You know, if you put green bins around for people, specifically for the cups, people will use them.
Yeah,
and any cups
will.
That end up in the garbage, it's very easy to separate these. It's hard plastic cups. It's not, they don't break, they don't crush.
That's a very good point. Why?
Separate.
But they're making a profit on the beer anyway, and that's allowed. But why do they have to charge the extra money in the first place?
Yeah, it seems. And it's just all awkward. It's very awkward for people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I saw people standing with several cups in their hands, you know, and it kind of ruins your experience at the concert. There's also a situation where you might have, you know, four people there and one person is slower drinking. You're kind of trying to rush him so you can go back to bring your cups back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next person has to go to the bar. So two people have to go to the bar together. One to bring the stuff back and one to buy the next round of drinks. Kind of splits the group up, ruins the experience of the night.
Well, I see one message there, someone saying, you're whinging. Joe, I had to queue to get me money back. When will the penny drop and stop plundering our planet for our convenience?
Well, that's not it at all. As I say, the cups are all returned regardless of the deposit. The cups are easy to reclaim. You know, I would say 99% of the cups would be used the next day, more.
Yeah.
All they have to do is put bins there and separate the garbage. And there wasn't much garbage. Concert. There was no real food on sale or anything.
Okay, Tommy is in Galway. 0818 715 815. Tommy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened to the big top in Galway?
I volunteer in the big top where the gigs are for the arts festival. And they brought in that system 2 or was it 3 years ago? I'm not sure. You go up, you buy your drink, and you pay €2 then for the plastic glass.
Okay.
And it's actually a stronger glass or stronger plastic than you would get the normal.
Of course, because it's going to be reusable.
Yeah, yeah. And you bring it back then and you get your €2 back. Except in Galway, when you're getting your glasses back or your plastic, the money for it back, they give you cash. So, there's no issue with that. Except what people were doing, as that man was saying there, you know, people would just discard them on the ground. So people were going up and, you know, they were collecting up the plastic and they were, you know, you could go up with 10 of them and you could end up with €2. And actually, one year there, myself and a friend, we came up with this scheme, even though we were volunteering, that we would gather up the glasses and we would go up. And so I did that one year and I ended up making a bit of money. But the problem was that the people behind the counter, they copped on that I was a volunteer, so I kind of got into a bit of trouble over it, but it was no big deal. This year they brought in a different scheme.
Okay.
That when you went up and you got your plastic glass or you shouldn't call them a glass, but you got your plastic container,
plastic beaker.
Say you bought 3 drinks and you paid the €2. They actually gave you 3 little coupons or 3 little tokens as well. So that was to kind of cut out the idea of people gathering up the plastic containers and making a bit of money on it. So when you went back then at the end of the night, you brought back your 3 plastic containers and you brought back your 3 coupons and they gave you the money back. But it was only €2.
Why does the system have to become so complicated? That's what Keith's point is. You know, why not simply you sell your beer in a reusable beaker or whatever, and you just place loads of containers at the exit saying, please, people want to get rid of them. They want to put them, and so they put them in the receptacles that are, and there's no big paperwork, no big bureaucracy, no big machinery, no PR companies, no advertising campaigns, no chief executives, deputy chief executives, assistant chief executives, no pension funds, no big quango. It's so straightforward. Like we were already recycling our plastic and our cans in the green. We all were paying for our green bins. A lot of people were campaigning, including me, over years that at the bottle banks, they should have added an aluminium can receptacle. They should have added a plastic bottle receptacle. It's the straightest thing in the world. Instead, they invented this massive, massive quango. And they put up the cost of living for so many people. Like someone who's buying, someone who has three children and has given them five little bottles to bring. And I know the answer people say, but this is what happens in real life. They have five bottles of water or whatever to bring in with them per week. That's £3 or £4 extra on their shopping bill before they go anywhere for the deposit.
Absolutely. A system like that would have worked brilliantly. But just on that particular one, the bottle return thing, I was actually up in Dunn's doing shopping yesterday. I know this is going a bit off topic, and I brought up my bottles, and there was two machines there. One of them was broken. And there was a woman then, and she had, I don't know how many she had. She had three or four big bags. She must have had, it looked like 100 of these plastic bottles. And there was somebody else in the queue. So I just went back out to my car, and I thought, I'm going to be waiting here for ages. And I put the bottles back, the plastic bottles back in my car, and I went in, did my shopping, and I didn't even avail of the return scheme.
Behemoth at this stage. It's unstoppable between the PR and the ads and the infrastructure they've established. Whereas we all had an infrastructure, we should have been encouraged. Everyone should have been encouraged to use it more instead of being treated like morons. Diana is in Cork. Diana.
Hi, Joe.
Yes,
haven't spoken for a while.
Okay, very good. Go ahead, Diana.
Basically, it's just that with coffee and things like that, I know that there are some places that we go to, obviously, to meet up with friends and whatever. And if we bring our own mugs in, our own cups in,
great.
They give us a small discount on the actual overall cost. So it may not be much, it may only be about 30 cents or something.
Can you imagine trying to bring a mug into a concert? You'd be told it's an insurance risk. You could do an injury. Someone could throw it.
Well, I suppose there is that. I'm just suggesting that in the main course of, you know, coffee and stuff like that.
Could
always, I mean, what's to stop you bringing your own collapsible cup into a concert?
And what? You walk up and you say, fill that up, and they say, is that pint, half a pint, half a litre, a litre? How do they know the measurement? They would say we dispense hygienically I'm not putting the beer into a dirty cup or a cup we haven't verified. That's you'll end up in a high court, Diana, if you bring in your own cup. You really will. And have you ever tried to bring anything into a concert that?
No, I haven't.
The coffee shop.
Genuinely speaking.
The coffee shop is...
Mainly a coffee shop, yeah. And, I mean, literally, there are still coffee shops out there who basically say, you've got to be flipping joking, well, you're using our cups or nothing.
Those paper cups are awful for the environment. They really are. Coffee cups.
Well, what we do with those, and I'll probably get slaughtered for this now, but what we do with those is we bring them home and we actually use them on the fire.
Okay. I'll have to advise you now that I have to take your full name and address, your particulars, and the thought police will be calling between 4 and 5. Would you have an overnight bag packed by then, Diana?
I'd probably be escaping to a different country.
Okay.
But the number of cups that we use in a week wouldn't be that much anyway. Yeah. So you are.
No, in fairness, you began by saying bring your own cup to the coffee shop or whatever. I agree with that.
A lot of coffee shops will accept your coffee cup.
Yeah.
And usually there's not a huge problem with that.
And even if they don't give you the couple of pence off, I know it's tight on coffee shops and any staff intensive business, but they won't say to you, we won't fill it for you. They will. They mightn't have a system to give you a few pence off, but they will welcome any attempt like that. Well done. Okay, Diana. Thanks.
A lot of them do.
Here. Thanks, Diana. Thanks, Keith. I read out the statement. I don't know what to do. These are, they have you when you get into these venues and people should know them, and don't come running to me. As my mother used to say, if you fall off that wall and break your leg, don't come running to me. Don't come running to me after these concerts next year saying you didn't know they were going to be, not you, Keith, they're going to be so dear, or the pint of Heineken was going to be 12 euro, whatever. That's what your people are going in with, their eyes wide open. Good morning, good Keith. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Paul Cunningham was in Swords. What happened? Where was it? Emerald Park?
It was, okay. Joe.
And caught a hurler, Paul.
rugby game. Okay. My partner's daughter went in with her son.
Okay.
Who was just 8. She was approximately 9 months pregnant. She had another 4 or 5 or 6 days to go.
Okay.
Not one to be held back in any way.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a very, very slight girl, so her pregnancy at that stage was very obvious to anybody. But she went in and she had contacted them and told them that she wanted to go in, but obviously she couldn't go on any of the rides because of her condition.
Okay.
So she said she just wanted her son to come in. He was bored. We were all bored waiting. So she went in. She arrived there. She explained to them that she couldn't go on. And they said, "Well, yeah, there's a discount, but why can't you? This is a disability." She said, "No, it's not a disability. I'm pregnant."
Yeah.
You're pregnant. Yeah. Have you got any? Have you got a letter from the doctor or any documentation? Well, there was a bit of a pause, and mm-hmm. she looked at the girl and she said, "Can you see me? I'm pregnant." And she said, "Yeah, we need something like maybe some documentation or something like that, or a letter from your doctor from the hospital." Or she just kind of went. She looked around. There's nobody looking. She says, "Right." Yeah. Pulled her top up and said, "There you go. Right. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Thank you very much." Put it down. Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much. Off you go.
So she was asking for there is a discounted ticket called the No Ride Pass, isn't there?
Yes, yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
and that's what she was looking for.
That's what she had checked with them on the radio. On the telephone. Yeah,
and they said, "Why are you requesting the No Ride Pass, which is slightly cheaper?" But she said, "Because I'm pregnant."
No. When she arrived.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yes.
Yeah.
But you're saying it's self-evident.
Yeah. But she was wearing a top, obviously.
Obviously.
And they said,
I don't. I don't know whether you've seen I'm thinking of the photographs that the great Aisling Bea, who's had a new baby. Congratulate the actress, stroke award-winning comedian from Ireland now, based in the UK and beyond. And she was posting photographs 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months pregnant. My God, it was obvious.
Yeah.
My God. Now she.
At almost 9 months, she was 1 week off her due date.
Wow.
So at this stage, it was very, very obvious. I mean, it was like...
If
she'd stood looking long enough, she would have seen some movement as well.
She was near the end of her pregnancy trip because that's what Aisling Bea has called hers. And she gave it 1 star today on a tweet. And she said, the negatives, this is her pregnancy trip.
Yeah.
Negatives, no breakfast, obviously, because morning sickness. Limited drinks menu, obviously. Expensive. Left feeling very unrested. Not as described. The pregnancy was not as described online or in pictures. Towards the end of my stay, I was repeatedly kicked. UTIs, bleeding, depression, cramps, insomnia, nosebleeds. So she said she never heard of anyone getting nosebleeds during pregnancy. No. Sinus blockage, migraines, vomiting, being randomly touched by people without asking. Bones mushing, organs moving, skin stretching, being told that you'll forget all the pain once the baby is born. That is a privilege and it will all be worth it in the end. And then when she did raise any of these issues, she was recommended by all and sundry to have a nice hot bath to get over. Okay, well, that's what happened.
Fixes everything.
And the baby arrived, Paul.
Oh, it did indeed.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. Healthy boy. Everything good. Bit of a screamer at first, but
okay.
Trying out the lungs for the first time, I suppose.
Yeah, great. A bit of a roller coaster, Paul, as we say in Armagh Park.
Very good.
Congratulations. Exactly. Congratulations. Well done to your partner's daughter.
But at least they had that kind of grace to look embarrassed.
They did, yeah. Okay.
So, fair enough. Okay. I might be more cheerful than people giving out about.
Yeah, okay. Good morning, good Paul. Ivan Moore, what happened, Ivan? I know you work with the Youth Services and the Liberties in Dublin.
That's it, Joe. Yeah, good afternoon to you. I was just hear the lady ringing in earlier on, and we had a couple of trips out there this summer with the summer program.
Okay.
And the last one we had, we brought 60 young people on the trip.
Oh, well done.
Hired a coach and brought them all out there.
Great.
Three of the group had or have autism, which is quite evident on appearance without anything else.
All right.
And when we got there, obviously we would have needed to have three of the youth workers allocated to them because they need one-to-one assistance.
Yeah.
And we'd informed them of this beforehand. I mean, we didn't hear anything back because we made a block booking, so it's €57 per head. So obviously they made a lot of money on that one trip, never mind the other ones.
And you get a discount, by the way, for a block booking?
We didn't, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
So anyway, we arrived there and I went up and I told them what the situation was, assuming that they would have known already from when we booked us. And they said, do you have any evidence of a diagnosis with you? And I said, well, I don't carry a diagnosis for children. That's in my care. That's a confidential thing for their parents.
Of course.
My person, we're just bringing them out for a day on a summer program. And I said to the girl, I said, it's evident that these children have disability special needs.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, I need a diagnosis. So anyway, I was standing there, say, for 20, 25 minutes, because when you go into a park like that, one, you have to watch them on a one-to-one basis, and two, if they're going on a ride, you have to go with them. So it's quite labour-intensive as well. But as it happened, one of the other workers went and contacted the parents, and after 25 minutes of trying to get them, she got a diagnosis sent back on her phone, and she showed it to them, and they were still hesitant, but they gave... Now, the passes were already paid for, so you're only talking about a pass where it gives you quick access, you know,
and
you still have to wait there. It's not like you just walk onto a ride. Then they took another 20 minutes to issue that then. On foot of that. But I even felt, you know, sharing something that's, you know, a very private matter to one or two, three of the children that was with us, with somebody.
But Evan, what are they trying to say? That you brought a group of many in your group, approximately 40.
60,
sorry.
There's a coach you, we were.
Yeah, okay, great. And great fun on the coach and all this fantastic trip. They're saying you brought a group of 60 and you magicked up to try and skip to queue for three of them. You magicked up that three of them that you would go in and feign or tell a porky pie that three of them have autism. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Well, no, it's off the wall, Joe. As I said to the girl, I said, you know, any rational thinking policy would state that, you know, what you deal with, what you have in front of you.
Yeah.
And it was quite evident that we were very well organised, and we had this is our tour trip there this summer. We'd already brought another 120 kids there before that. So a well organised organisation, and, you know, we do all these plans all year round. And I was talking to one of our researchers there, and we go to we've never had that problem anywhere. Because it shouldn't. You're right. You know, what would you do? Get somebody to act before you go in to act that they have a disability. I mean, it's off the wall. But the staff member didn't have. They were like a blank. It was like the training is obviously not there, and the policy is not there, and there's no thought put into it. I mean, it's expensive for a family or for anybody to go. And never mind the summer projects and schools bringing a lot of people there. It takes a lot of organisation. Bring 60 children there on a day, a lot of organisation,
of course it does.
Buses and staff and the whole lot.
And then you're
going in,
and then you're
as a professional.
You're vigilant for the whole day. You've got to keep an eye on them. You've got to.
Yeah, it's all work. So I think, you know, I said to the girl that day, I asked her for an email address, which they took a while to get for me, that I could basically make a complaint, which I did. I didn't get anything back, and I, you know, explained that, you know, it's just not, it's something that's just not acceptable in this day and age. It's actually not acceptable
here.
In any shape or form, you know.
And I I heard Adam Harris on Morning Ireland this morning making the exact same point. He's a great campaigner, as you know, in the artistic world. Yeah, he's very good. Okay, Evan, thanks for making, and well done on the work, Evan. When I was running summer projects at Ballymun, we brought them to the zoo.
And
we were operating on a shoestring, as you are as well. But we got a group discount at the zoo, especially as the bus driver parked the bus. We made a mistake of opening the door, and all the kids ran through the gate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, from Ballyfair.
Loved it.
I'm saying. Dublin Zoo are excellent. Fort Lucan is excellent. There's loads of places that sort of carry-on doesn't happen because they use, you know, they have a rational approach to people coming and they know that they're busy.
We believe people. We're a good country. We believe people. We don't need to be hectored, lectured, made pay extra, deposit returns. We're good people. Like, we will, we will do the right thing. Okay, Evan, well done on your service, as they say, and mind yourself. That's Evan Moore. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Barbara Moynihan, again, the invisibility of people who are different. What happened, Barbara?
Hi, Joe. Yes, that's why I emailed you, because I've been listening to the discussion on disability. I'm not disabled myself, Joe, and the incident referred to my husband, who developed COPD, or as a lot of people would probably refer to as emphysema. Now, he had to finally go into an electric wheelchair, Joe, and he was on the portable oxygen.
Okay.
Now, he was under the care of one of our well-known hospitals, and he used to go up occasionally because they had to assess the progress or not of the disease. So because the wheelchair was electric, he had an electronic arm that lifted it out of the boot.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very independent, articulate, intelligent man. So anyway, he used to go up on his own. So this particular day, I said, sure, I'll pop in and go up with you.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to discuss with a member of the, he was on two different medical, under two different medical teams.
Okay.
So he wanted to discuss something about the oxygen levels. And finally, one of the medical team arrived. And now, Paul, my husband, we were in our civvies. You know, he wasn't an inpatient.
Okay.
So straight away, I was standing to one side of the chair, the wheelchair, and she came to the other, and she never even looked at Paul. She immediately started talking to me. So I said, sorry, can you stop there now for a minute? I said, I'm not the patient.
Well done, my husband,
Paul. I was annoyed, Joe, but I said, it's Paul. And I said, there's nothing wrong with my husband's brain. It's his lungs are the problem. So would you mind addressing him? Now, my husband was well able to speak up for himself. He was probably more pragmatic than me, Joe, but I just got annoyed because he was suddenly invisible. And it was the invisibility that annoyed me. So she was slightly embarrassed, but you know what, Joe? I hope at least she might in future it'll be a lesson to develop a sense of awareness. And Joe, I have to put my hand on my own heart to say that before my husband ended up in a wheelchair and with a disability, I probably would have been guilty of treating people with disabilities as invisible people.
Okay.
So I want, if anybody's listening, to make an apology to them.
Okay, well said.
I'm now re-educated, Joe. I hope, anyway, you know.
Yeah. Well, well said.
Yeah, it's the invisibility that I think really, you know, once you end up with, especially if you're in a wheelchair,
And they you were discussing, you wanted to discuss oxygen levels.
Yes, because I tell you, Joe.
How would that affect your brain? How would that affect his brain?
Well, now, Joe, hang on. I suppose if you disconnected somebody's oxygen levels, your brain would go AWOL. Now, obviously, that hasn't happened to you. But, it was just, you see, you're not allowed to interfere with the oxygen levels because the medics
But my point is, Barbara, when you said to them, talk to my husband, he's the patient.
Yes. She apologised, and I'm fairness. Okay. Okay. She apologized. But Joe, the point is, they were dealing with the team he was under were specialists in his condition. So I shouldn't have had to say that to them, you know. But I have heard from other disabled people, for example, Joe, once you end up, say, in a wheelchair, it becomes as if you've almost gone like gaga. You wouldn't be able to string two words together. I just don't understand it. But then again, Joe, I wasn't the best.
Okay, you were that soldier.
You know,
yeah, okay.
I was, and I'm not now, but, you know.
It's learning. Learning for everyone,
yeah,
Barbara.
It is, okay, Joe.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that, Barbara?
Well, poor old Paul, he was in his 60s at the time, Joe, and unfortunately he's gone now. He died on my birthday. So he's gone now. But do you know what, Joe? Not to be depressing, but I think the last year of my husband's life, he really would have preferred to have been gone, even though for me it was like the elephant in the room. But anybody with that horrible disease knows you can basically do nothing because you've just literally no oxygen. Yeah. He couldn't even lift a cup. And he never sought attention on himself. And you know what, Joe, I have to tell you, the day before he died, my husband was very interested in history. Mm-hmm. And he had a non-fiction book on the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, brilliant.
And a huge book, Joe. And the day before he died, he finished it. So when I was getting rid of a lot of stuff, I put a note on that book. I just couldn't let it go.
Oh, what a lovely memory.
Yeah.
And
you know what, Joe, before I let you go, somebody actually said to me, a very good friend of mine, her husband said, that was Paul's gift to Barbara. He set her free. Now, other people thought that was a horrible thing to say, but people who knew my husband well would have appreciated that sentiment, even though I would have hung on to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and he was an avid reader, was he?
Yeah, he was. He loved particularly non-fiction. Yeah, he did. He was. Yeah. And we used to go to Spain for the winters every year because of his condition.
Okay.
So, you know, it was helpful. But anyway, that was only one, Joe. I could bore you to death, but I won't. That was only one incident that happened. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm thinking I was reading John McGahan's. Now, it is fiction, John McGahan's book recently. It's called Korea. Now, it's set here, but it's a fantastic story. And it was made into a brilliant movie as well, about father-son relationship and their, obviously, a connection with the Korean Civil War. But I was at a lecture last night by Tom English, who runs the McGahan Centre, the McGahan Barracks in Coote Hall, where they are preserving the love and legacy of John McGahan as a writer. And I was thinking, listening to Tom English, we were remembering a great pal of ours, John Sligo Hogan. But listening to Tom's lecture, I thought if there was such a thing, which there isn't, of course, as a posthumous Nobel Prize for Literature, John McGahan probably would have got it, such was his output. But then I was looking up this morning, the Nobel Prize for Literature, it's now 30 years since Seamus Heaney won it for Ireland. I think it's time we won it again, given the quality of our writing. And I think I was looking up this morning because it's going to be announced in about 3.5-4 weeks. And I reckon, now I'm not a betting person, but I reckon, I did say one year that John Banville was going to win the Booker for his book The Sea, and he did, and he didn't believe me himself when I said it, apparently, but he did win the Booker. I'm predicting that the Nobel Prize for Literature this year will not go to Ireland, it will go to Wexford. and it will be between two fantastic writers, Colm Tobin and John Banville. One was born in Enniscorthy, Colm Tobin, and the other was born in Wexford Town. So I reckon the Nobel Prize for Literature is coming back, not to Ireland, but it's coming to Wexford. Please God, in the next, they definitely, definitely deserve it.
Wait till I tell Joe, you know you're the oracle for Ireland, so if they don't listen to you, I mean, there's no hope for us. But Joe, listen, I just want to tell you on a book. Have you read A Perigon by Colm McCann?
No, but I know of it. I know of it.
Oh, and it's, Joe, read
and it's,
it.
And it's more relevant today than ever, isn't it? Because
of the
Palestine.
Oh, Joe, please
Palestine.
Read
okay,
it.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
A Perigon.
Yeah.
Okay, but a great Colm McCann. Maybe Colm McCann would win the Nobel Prize. But the thing about Colm Tobin and John Banville, their repertoire is just so extensive at this stage. They definitely deserve it. Anyway, okay, Barbara, that was enjoyable, and God rest your husband. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, on the John McGahan Barracks, it's mcgahanbarracks.ie. It's run totally and completely by volunteers. They don't get a penny or a red rex in government support. So if you can support them, it's just, even go and look at the website. It's a fantastic website, mcgahanbarracks.ie. But they are looking for support if you can help. Where is Mary McElhenney? Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. Your point, please.
My point, I was at a Bloom Festival, Flower Festival, there in June.
Yeah.
And they had bins collecting returnables, separate bins for tins, cans and plastic bottles. And the money then was going to charity.
Well, you see, my argument there is, why was there never bins before? Why did they why did they have to put up the price of everything? Build this massive infrastructure, Quango, called Return, put out all these big, awful, obstructive machines all over the joint, set up, employ PR companies, I presume lawyers, I presume HR, I presume paid chief executives, shed loads, and it's the ordinary punter that has to pay it with 25 cent extra on their plastic bottle. Why did they not put in these bins all along?
I know, I was at the shops yesterday and I saw a man with three plastic bags full of containers, whereas normally if it was me, I'd be putting them into bins, squash
you
them.
You put them in the waste. Bin. You have your
nowadays,
green bin.
You can't squash them.
I know that. But anyway, and now the other, the envelope or the blanket they're putting over this now, Return, is saying, oh, we will, if you put your bottles and cans back in these bins. They did an electric picnic, and the envelope was, oh, we will give the money to charity. Well, I'd like to decide what charity I want to give my money to, and I presume, like a lot of people, we are charitable. But they picked the charities, which I'm sure are brilliant. Nobody could argue against the charities. But my point is, why could you not put those blue bins in beforehand? Why did you have to wait until you put up the price? Because put up the price for ordinary families. But anyway, I've lost that argument months ago, Mary, but well done, and you enjoyed Bloom. Barry is in Monaghan. Barry.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Robert Mizell. I love him.
Yes, I love him too. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm fabulous.
Okay. Now I know you're going to, you know, over the summer, because the summer that was in it, I decided that every day we would have a song on the programme.
Yes, I know, just
for a bit of levity. So while you're answering the questions, will you get a Robert Mizell song into your head, please? Because you're going to be singing it in a few minutes. What happened, Barry?
Well, we take a few drink cans with us when we're going to the dance, or any Robert Mizell dance. So we would. I'd get my wife to take a big handbag with her, and we'd push a few cans of 7-Up free down into it, and we just have them with us, you know, because the drinks are too dear in these places now, though.
And are you allowed in with them, Barry?
Well, you see, they'd never ask to look in the handbag.
Okay.
So, you know.
And your cans are closed, obviously.
They're closed, yes.
Because sometimes they're wary of, say, bottles of 7-Up, because there might be something in it that's not 7-Up. Are you following me?
I understand you, yes. I understand you, what you're saying, yes. So we do.
But you're saying, obviously, if you bring the can, there is 7-Up in the can, so you're not trying to...
No, there's only seven up. They're not opened or they're not tampered with or anything.
Okay. And Barry, is there drink for sale at the venue anyway?
Oh, yeah, there's any amount of drink, but anything you want.
Okay. Have you ever been checked when you go in and anyone ever said to you, listen, you can't?
No. Well, you see, Magella, she'd be carrying the handbag with the stuff in it, the drinks in it. There'd be nothing. They couldn't see anything. There's only a few soft drinks. That's all that's in it.
Well, I remember recently myself and a pal, we bought a sandwich. I'm a cheapskate anyway. But we bought a sandwich on the main street and we went into a Starbucks or whatever. And we sat down, obviously got a coffee and
they cheese you.
Yeah, well, no, they're lovely crowd, but they came over and said to us, you can't eat your own food in here. So we swapped so we swapped sandwiches.
Yes.
Okay, Barry, good man. Let me go to Liz. Liz, are you gonna sing for me, Barry?
Stick on a tune now and sing along for the pack.
Okay, is there Robert Mazzell there
Robin
anywhere?
I was at Robin Mazzell and Carlo there Friday night in the Woodford Doman.
There we are. Keeping up the Live Line summer tradition of music every day on the programme, come hail, rain
with
or shine.
Barry Matthews and Joe Duffy. Waited for you and always been true. Waited no longer, I can stand. I know you were trying to make up your mind. I've waited as long as I can.
Don't say you love me.
Say you love me. Long for the day you take my hand. I asked again last night. You love me. I've waited as long as I can.
Okay, well done, Barry. Well done. Well done, Barry. Well done.
Good
well
man.
Done. Good man, Barry.
I'll see you at the Plowing Championship.
Please, God.
In a of
yeah, I want to go. You said yeah. I want to go. God bless you, Barry. See you at the Plowing. Liz, back to this phenomenon. We've asked the guards, we've no reply as of yet. Has there been an increase in the theft of motorbikes? Liz, what happened?
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Good.
My motorbike was stolen earlier this year. I obviously reported to the guards and whatnot. And then I got a tip off of where it was being ridden around the fields. So I rang the guards. They did show up at the field. So myself and the guards stood there watching them racing up and down the field, beeping the horn at us. Now, the guard said, like, there's nothing that they can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Nothing?
No, they can't approach
can't
them once they're on
them,
the bikes.
Yeah.
They can't chase them. Once they're on the bikes, they can't chase them. So I did my own social media investigation. I did find a photograph of my bike with the culprit on it, with the name. I went down to the guards, showed them the evidence, and they basically shrugged and said, sure, like, there'll be no repercussions. There'll be no point in following up because they're more than likely underage. And even if it did get to court, they'd get a slap on the wrist. So I understand the...
And the Gardaí, as we heard yesterday, the Gardaí are very, very reticent to chase them. Because a lot of them are not wearing helmets. If, God forbid, something happened to one of them, you'd be... Anyway, we don't want anything to happen to anybody. Nobody.
No,
will.
Absolutely not. But something is going to happen. Yeah. And, you know, and then, something will happen.
Any chance? What did you get your bike back?
No, they rode it around for about 5 days and then ran out of petrol. So tried to burn it and then it was found, but it was written off then. Yeah. So.
And you paid nearly $4,000 for it in 2021.
Yeah.
How many miles on the clock or kilometres or whatever?
There was only about 300 kilometres on it.
For God's sake.
Yeah. So it's just infuriating, you know, like, I don't know why the guards couldn't follow up on what I showed them. You know, make life uncomfortable for them rather than just letting them think that they can absolutely get away with it.
Yeah.
You know,
As I said before, the Gardaí should be given one little basic power. Anyone suspected of a crime, or they stopped them on their scramblers, the Gardaí should be allowed seize their mobile phones for 7 days to seize their any evidence of untoward behaviour on it, and that will soon frighten the living life out of them, because they're oxygen. That's their oxygen. Okay, Liz, and I see more calls there about motorbikers as well. Michael Hoey, yesterday morning, I said I read this letter, the Belfast Telegraph on Saturday, calling for the opening of a Harry Ferguson Museum, as in Massey Ferguson, as in the tractors, 90 years mm-hmm. since the first tractor was invented. Yesterday morning, when the letter by Stephen Patterson, the Belfast Telegraph, was looking for support to open a Harry Ferguson Museum, we now discover there's two of them. Michael Hoey, where's your Ferguson Museum?
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah. Our one is in Skerries, in North County Dublin.
Okay.
And we've had it for a number of years now.
And what's it, apart from the, tell me how many tractors, what's the oldest tractor?
Well, we actually have a 1937 Ferguson Brown that they were talking about yesterday. And we're very fortunate to have that. That is the oldest one we have. And that was before Harry Ferguson had facilities to make tractors himself. He went to David Brown.
That's right.
And the David Brown manufactured tractors right up until the Second World War for him. But we have various models then over the years. And as we have with other makes as well, but we have quite a few Fergusons.
And why? Why did you start it?
I don't know, Joe. We haven't found the answer to that yet. No. But we're very fortunate in to have them. So.
And many, I've been sent a photograph. It looks incredible.
What is? We're very lucky, yeah. And
what is that?
All been restored.
What is that unit you have it in?
That's a building, a farm building.
And it's in Skerries.
In Skerries, yeah.
And when do you open?
We just do charity days, Joe, that's all.
Okay.
It's not a commercial business or anything like that. And the next one we have is on the 23rd and 24th of November for St. Vincent de Paul for their Christmas affair, or Christmas appeal, sorry. But the only problem we have is we have to do it by ticket now, because we couldn't cope with the people that was coming, so we do it by, and St. Vincent de Paul sell the tickets through Eventbrite, which will be sold next Sunday morning.
Okay.
And
why, I presume there's an issue with staff and all that kind of, but why would you, given the demand, could you not open it every weekend, no?
Well, I have to talk to my bosses, my wife and the girls,
okay,
you know. But,
yeah.
But no, we depend on volunteers for those weekends. And there's quite a lot of, you know, you have all sorts of insurance issues and
rates and different things like that
if you open it as a commercial entity. But, Joe, you're welcome to come anytime.
I love it. Well, I was telling people yesterday, one, I read that letter, and two, I just seen on the road in Wexford, I'd seen a tractor.
Yeah.
60, it was definitely a Massey.
Yeah,
it was a small,
62.
The small Massey, 62 WX. It was on the road with a trailer behind it with a few creamery churns.
Well,
that must be a record.
Well, that there is quite a few of those tractors still in use every day. And we're very fortunate in Ireland that we have had two of the most famous manufacturers of tractors and inventors of tractors ever in history were Irishmen, with both Henry Ford and Harry Ferguson.
Well done.
And it's unique in that way. So.
Okay, well done. Okay, keep it going, won't you, Michael? Please keep it going. I'm looking at the photograph.
Thank you, Joe.
I'll tweet the photograph in a sec. You're going to be inundated. It looks incredible. What a treasure. What a treasure, and well done. What do you do in real life, Michael, quickly? What do you do in real life?
In real life, we're farming, and we actually manufacture foods as well and pack foods for the supermarkets.
Okay, well done. Well done, Michael Hoey, in North County, Dublin. Tara Lockery, Grant Producer. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.